Welcome to another episode with the Atheist Reporter. On July 13, 2023, at 3:17 in the afternoon, a disclosure form was filed with the Office of the Clerk of the United States House of Representatives. It listed the purchase of 50 call options on NVIDIA's operation, a leverage bet that the chipmaker's stock would rise, strike price $120, expiration January 2024, trade size between $1 million and $5 million. The purchaser was Paul Pelosi. His wife, Nancy Pelosi, has been Speaker of the House until 6 months earlier and remained one of the most powerful members of the Congress. The House was in those weeks actively negotiating implementation rules and export controls for the Chips and Science Act, the most consequential semiconductor legislation in modern American history. Members in relevant committees had access to non-public information about export control carve-outs that would, within months, send NVIDIA's stock to a record high. By the time the trade was disclosed, the position had already been opened. By the time the news hit financial press, NVIDIA has already begun its climb. 6 months later, when the call options expired, it had produced a return of approximately $5 million. The trade was perfectly legal. This is the subject of today's episode. You're listening to The Atheist Reporter. I am here to tell you how it is possible 14 years after Congress passed a law named the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act for a member of the Congress and that member's family to actively buy and sell shares of companies whose fortunes depend on votes the member is about to cast. I am here to name the members doing it. I am here to explain how the social system works and why you cannot catch them. I am here to tell you who has tried to stop them and why every reform attempt has died in vain. And I am here to tell you what an actual ban would look like, why other democracies have won and we do not, and what you can do about it. This is the Atheist Reporter, no advertisers, no corporate sponsor, just the truth. The Stock Act was signed into law on April 4, 2012 by President Obama. It passed the Senate 96-3. It passed the House 417-2, nearly an unanimous bipartisan consensus, which sounds on its own make you suspicious. In November 2011, CBS 60 Minutes ran a segment called Insiders, opening with the statement that Congress was exempt from the federal insider trading laws that govern everyone else. Steve Crofts interviewed Peter Schweizer, who had spent over a year matching members, trading records to votes they had cast. The results were predictable. Members on Financial Service Committee traded financial service stocks. Members on Energy Committee traded energy stocks. The segment named Speaker John Boehner, Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, and Spencer Bacus, the Republican chair of House Financial Service, who had bought options betting on the market decline within hours of a confidential 2008 briefing from Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, describing that exact decline. Within a week, congressional offices were flooded with calls. A bill that had been languished since 2006 without a single hearing suddenly became the most popular legislation in Washington. The Stock Act declared members of Congress and staff were not exempt from federal insider trading laws. It required the disclosure of any trade above $1,000 within 45 days. It required online posting of those disclosed disclosures. It prohibited members from receiving special IPO allocations. It directed the SEC and DOJ to investigate violations. It did not work and it was not allowed to work. On April 15, 2013, almost exactly 1 year later, during the week of the Boston Marathon bombings, Congress amended the Stock Act. The amended passed both chambers by unanimous consent. No recorded vote, no floor debate, no public notice, titled with language designed to attract your attention. It stripped out the requirement that senior congressional staff, executive branch staff, and judiciary employees would post their disclosures in a publicly searchable online database. Members of Congress remained covered. Their staff did not. The justification was a national security concern about foreign intelligence service mining the data. The risk was real but unproven. No documented exploitation had occurred in the year that disclosures were made public, and the same logic was never applied to the members themselves. We all hold classified assets. What the 2013 amendment did was preserve the legal architecture of the Stock Act while disabling the enforcement infrastructure that made it real. This is the central problem with how Congress regulates itself. It writes the law, it writes the exceptions, and writes the amendment. There is no constituency for accountability itself, only for its appearance. A member of Congress must disclose a qualifying stock transaction within 45 days. The disclosure is filed as a PDF, not machine readable, not sortable, not easily cross-referenced against your vote without significant manual effort. 45 days is an eternity in equity market. A member can learn material non-public information Monday, trade Tuesday, capture gain by Thursday, and face no disclosure obligation for 6 weeks, time enough to be drafted, voted on, signed, and fully priced into the market before the public ever learned the trade happened. Here is what that looks like in practice. On February 13, 2020, Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina, then chair of Senate Intelligence Committee, attended a private briefing on the emerging coronavirus outbreak. That same day, he sold 33 stock positions worth between $628,000 and $1.7 million. Hospitality stock, airline stock, hotel chain. 14 days later, Burr told a private group of donors in a recorded speech later obtained by NPR that the pandemic would hurt our entire economy and be more aggressive than anything in recent history. The same day, his public statement said the virus posed no serious threat. By March 20th, 2020, ProPublica and Center of Responsive Politics had reported the trade. The stock Bob sold had fallen 30 to 60%. He avoided the losses of roughly $250,000 to $700,000. The FBI investigated for 9 months, seized his phone, interviewed witnesses, conveyed a grand jury. In 2021, January, the Department of Justice closed the case without charges, concluding it would not be beyond a reasonable doubt that Burr had traded on information from his official briefing. Despite the timing, the directional consistency, and the scale of the trade related to his normal pattern. To my knowledge, the Department of Justice has never successfully prosecuted a sitting member of Congress under the Stock Act. Not once. Burr was the closest call and he was in charge. He served out his term and retired in January 2023. If you are a member of Congress, the Stock Act is not a law that constrains your behavior. It is a population problem you can manage by communication. I want to talk about the Pelosi's carefully. The line between aggressive market timing and unlawful insider trading has never been formally adjudicated for them, and likely never will be. But the public record is on its own extraordinary. Paul Pelosi, husband of Nancy Pelosi, speaker from 2007 to 2011 and again from 2019 to 2023, runs a real estate and venture capital firm and has executed hundreds of stock transactions during his wife's congressional career, reported on her disclosures because outside trades are imputed to the member. According to Unusual Wales, which aggregates that these disclosures, the Pelosi household reported trades from roughly 2014 through 2024 have outperformed the S&P 500 by margins ranging from 15% to over 60% annually in different windows. In 2021, by a margin that would place them among top-tier hedge fund managers. These are reasonable rebutters. The trading volume is small relative to institutional books, which are easier to outperform. Paul Pelosi's banking career gives him information networks unrelated to Congress and a concentrated tech bet during a tech boom with look insider shaped in hindsight regardless, all true. But these three examples are hard to explain through coincidence alone. Microsoft 2021, on June 18th, Paul Pelosi exercised call options on Microsoft worth $250,000, so $500,000, disclosed July 2nd. On July 14th, the Department of Defense awarded Microsoft a $21.88 billion contract for Army Augmented Reality Headset, a contract that had been classified procurement review for roughly 8 months. By the end of September, the trade had returned between $375,000 and $1.2 million. There is no public evidence Speaker Pelosi was briefed on this contract, and no public evidence of any other explanation for the trade's timing. NVIDIA 2023, on July 13th, Paul Pelosi purchased NVIDIA call option worth $1 million to $5 million. Disclosed 22 days later. On July 26, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee held a disclosed briefing on pending semiconductor export controls. On August 11, the Commerce Department issued guidance that, while restrictive on Chinese end users, preserved NVIDIA's core revenue. By year-end, the position had returned between $1.5 million and $5 million. Pelosi was not on foreign relations, but as a former speaker, remained in close contact with the relevant committee chairs. Visa 2020. On December 22nd, Pelosi shuttered Visa stock. The next business day, the Justice Department's Antitrust Division announced an investigation into Visa debit card practice, one that had been running for 14 months and was under federal antitrust practice. Non-public, Visa fell 6%. The short closed at a profit. I am not making a legal game of insider trading here. The standard requires moving a chain of custody from non-public information trade that no prosecutor has ever constructed in this case. But the rule the Stock Act was supposed to enforce was supposed to mean something. In any other context, these trades would draw serious investigation. In November of 2022, in the weeks after the Republican Party retook the House and as her tenure as Speaker came to a close, Nancy Pelosi was asked at a press conference whether she supported legislation banning members of Congress from trading individual stock. Her answer was, and I quote, "We are a free market economy. They should be able to participate in that. It is a fair answer for a citizen to give. It is a remarkable answer for a Speaker of the House to give. And it is in the context of our own household's documented trading record. The answer that explains everything about why this matter has not been ended. I want to spend the same care on the Republican side because the criticism of congressional stock trading has often been characterized as a partisan attack on Nancy Pelosi specifically. It is not, and the public record makes that clear. So let me tell you about Tommy Tuberville. Tommy Tuberville is a senior United States senator from Alabama. He was elected in 2020 after a career as a college football coach. He has since taken office in January 2021, disclosed approximately 1,500 separate stock and commodity transactions. According to the analysis of his disclosure by the Watchdog Campaign Legal Center, Tuberville filed approximately one-third of his disclosure late in violation of the Stock Act, reporting deadlines, and was assessed a statutory of $200 fine for each late filing. The total fines paid by Senator Tuberville for Stock Act violations are, as of the most recent reporting, approximately $11,200. His net worth, by most public estimates, is $200 million. Tuberville trades have included commodity futures, positions of unusual size, including substantial positions in cattle, soybean, and grain futures during periods when Tuberville sat on the Senate Committee on Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry. The committee has direct jurisdiction over commodity market regulation and periodic reauthorization of the United States Department of Agriculture Commodity Support Programs. Tuberville committee assigned give him access to non-public USDA market forecasts and pending federal farm support program changes. Information that in commodity future market has direct and measurable price impact. In May 2002, Tuberville was forced to publicly close a single cattle futures contract he had purchased in March 2021 that had produced a return of more than 200% at a time when overall cattle futures had risen approximately 35%. The disappropriation between his return and the broader market was the result, his office said, of leverage. The use of leverage commodity contracts by a sitting United States senator who serves on the committee with jurisdiction over the commodity market is, by any reasonable ethical standard, problematic. It is also, under current law, perfectly legal. Let me tell you about David Perdue. David Perdue served as a junior United States Senator from Georgia from January 2015 to January 2021. He sat on the Senate Banking Committee and the Senate Armed Service Committee. He executed during his 6 years in office approximately 2,600 individual stock transactions, the highest trading volume of any sitting senator during that period. According to investigative reporting by the New York Times, Perdue executed trade in BB&T Corporation, a bank then headquartered in his home state, on dates that lined up suspiciously with non-public bank regulatory development handled by the banking committee on which he sat. He executed trades in Pfizer on dates that lined up with the Defense Department's vaccine procurement timeline that armed service had visibility into. He executed trades in Cardlytics, a small Atlanta-based fintech that received a federal contract within most of his trade. The Department of Justice and the Securities and Exchange Commission opened investigation of Perdue's Cardlytics trade in 2020. Both investigations were closed in 2021 without charges. Perdue lost his reelection to Senator John Ossoff in January of 2021. Let me tell you about Kelly Loeffler. Kelly Loeffler served as a junior United States Senator from Georgia for approximately 1 year, from January 2020 to January 2021. Having been appointed to fill a vacancy, she and her husband, who is the chair and the CEO of Intercontinental Exchange, the parent company of the New York Stock Exchange, held substantial stock positions across a wide range of industries. On January 24th, 2020, Senator Loeffler attended a closed-door detailed committee briefing on the emerging coronavirus outbreak. The same day, she began executing a series of stock sales valued at between $1.275 million and $3.1 million. Among the stocks sold, ExxonMobil, Residio Technologies, AutoZone. Among the stock purchased, Citrix System, a remote work software company whose stock would in the months that followed rise dramatically as the pandemic forced business worldwide to adopt remote work. Senator Loeffler was investigated by the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Senate Ethics Committee, and the Security and Exchange Commission. All four investigations were closed without action. Senator Loeffler attributed the trade to her financial advisors, whom she said had managed the accounts without her direct knowledge. She lost her election to Senator Raphael Warnock in January 2021. I am giving you these names for Loeffler, Perdue, Tuberville, alongside the Pelosi, specifically because the route is bipartisan. The defense of congressional stock trading is bipartisan. The reform legislation is opposed in committee and on the floor by members of both parties. This is no clean party here. This is a corrupt institution. There is also one bipartisan fact about all these names I have mentioned. None of them has ever been criminally charged under the Stock Act. Not one. The law that was passed with 96 votes in the Senate and 417 votes in the House, the law that was signed by President Obama in the wake of the 60 Minutes investigation, the law that was supposed to make Congress accountable to the same insider trading rules as the rest of the country, has produced zero criminal convictions in 14 years. When the law has been on the books for 14 years and has produced zero convictions against the people it was designed to regulate, the explanation is not that the people it was designed to regulate are all law-abiding. The explanation is that law does not work. I want to walk through the reform legislation that has been introduced since the Stock Act, because the pattern of how each bill dies is in itself the most important evidence of why this problem continues. The pattern of how reform dies is itself the evidence. 2020, Senator Jeff Merkley introduced the Banned Conflicts Trading Act, referred to committee, dies without a hearing. 2021, Senator Elizabeth Warren and Sherrod Brown introduced the Anti-Corruption and Public Integrity Act with a comprehensive trading ban, same committee, same fate. 2022, after outrage of Tuberville's trade, Speaker Pelosi tasked Representative Joe Lofgren's House Administrative Committee with drafting bipartisan legislation. Hearings are held. A framework combating financial conflict of interest in government acts is produced. 6 weeks before the midterm, Pelosi declines to bring it to a vote. Lofgren says it was simply pulled. Punch Bowl News and Axios report that members on both sides told leadership they'll vote no if it reached the floor. The bill the speaker asked her own committee to write is withdrawn before any member has to go on record. 2023, new speaker Kevin McCarthy declines to commit to a vote. Nothing is scheduled all year. 2024, a bipartisan group, John Ossoff, Gary Peters, Josh Hawley, Cynthia Loomis, introduced the Ethics Act, banning individual stock ownership by members, the president, the vice president, and their spouse, and dependent children. It gets a hearing in July 2024, the first in over a decade, and clears committee. It then sits on the calendar, never scheduled for a floor vote until the 118th Congress adjourns in January 2025. 2025, Hawley reintroduced it. As of this recording, it has not received a hearing. Every reform bill follows the same path: introduction, new coverage, committee referrals, quiet death. Nothing has ever reached a floor vote on its merits. Leadership in both parties knows the math. A floor vote will likely run through 19-10 in favor of reform because no member wants to be on the record voting to keep their own stock trading privilege. Floor votes are visible. Committee debt are visible. The way Congress protects itself from reform is by never letting its members vote on it. Why disclosure can't fix this? The deeper issue is structural, not procedural. Members of Congress have categories of non-public assets that no disclosure rule, however, fast can neutralize. Classified intelligence briefing on defense, sanctions, pandemic, cyber threat that move market the moment they go public. Regulatory agency communication, Federal Reserve Act, so banking, USDA, forecast of agriculture, antitrust briefing to judiciary, all non-public until they are in. Draft legislation and committee marks of knowing weeks ahead what a tax, etiquette, or trade provisions say and which industries it will move. Appropriations decision, knowing which contractors will get renewed federal contracts before the public does. This is a systematic advantage, not a single leak. Even instantaneous exclusion wouldn't fix it. The members deal trade first and the market reacts after. The only effective rule is one that prevents trade from happening in the first place. This is the rule every serious reform bill has proposed. It is the rule that dies in the committee every time. How does other democracies handle this? The US is an outlier. The United Kingdom requires MPs to declare financial interests before debating them and requires cabinet members to divest entirely or use blind trust. Canada's Conflict of Interest Act since 2006 requires public office holders, including the Prime Minister and Cabinet, to divest or blind trust any holding above $5,000. Australia, Germany, France, Japan, South Korea, and Netherlands all have more restrictive conflict of interest rules than the United States Congress. France and Germany requires ministers to divest individual stock on taking home. The United States Congress is the only legislative body among major democracies whose member can actively manage individual stock portfolios while sitting on committees that regulate the industries those portfolios touch, and the only one that has repeatedly failed to pass a ban with overwhelming public support and bipartisan sponsorship. This isn't a claim that America is the most corrupt democracy. It is a narrower claim on this specific act. It is the most dismissive. There is no cooperative or democratic theory argument for maintaining that. There's only the political economy argument. The people who have to vote for change are the people who benefit from the status quo. A real ban has six features. It covers individual stock and commodity ownership, not just active trading applying to members. The president, vice president, cabinet, and roughly the top 4,000 federal officials are authority for the duration of office was a 6-month tail. It covers spouses and dependent children. Without these, the entire structure collapses, as the Pelosi case demonstrates. It requires divestment within 19 days of taking office, either by selling holdings or transferring them into a qualified line trust with no member knowledge of or input into the holdings. It permits alternative index funds, treasury bonds, cash, money market funds, CDS, and real estate below a threshold outside the members' policy influence. The goal isn't to stop members from investing. It is to remove the alignment between their finances and their votes. It is reinforcement, an independent body with subpoena power. Mandatory DOJ referral, a 50% penalty on disallowed transaction plus disjudgment of and a 5-year statute of limitations running from disclosure, not from trade day. It requires machine-readable disclosure of maintaining permitted holdings within one business day, maintained as a permanent public archive. This isn't a novel proposal. It exists today in the Senate as the Ethics Act. It does not have a floor vote schedule. The political economy question, why Congress would pass a ban with overwhelming public support, deserves a direct answer because you can't fix what you don't understand. The standard explanation is that member benefits personally and resists change. True, but it's insufficient. Most members don't run sophisticated trading books. Their portfolios would barely be touched by an index fund only rule. The members who run aggressive books are small subset, maybe 20 to 40 in any given Congress, and would in principle be outvoted if you reached the floor. The deeper explanation has three parts. First, institutional reciprocity. Members trade favors constantly. A member who votes to constrain a colleague's stock trading is, in effect, asking that colleague to vote to constrain something the first member cares about. The currency of congressional politics is mutual forbearance. I won't take away your freedom if you don't take away mine. Multiply that across 535 members and the chamber can't move. Secondly, donor class capture. The members most likely to be sophisticated traders also tend to have the deepest financial industry donor relationship. A ban wouldn't directly touch those donors, but the public conversation it would trigger about who gets to profit from policy information create an uncomfortable adjacency they would rather avoid. Those preferences travel through campaign, finance, committee chairs, the bill dies. Thirdly, and most important, leadership controls the floor calendar. The Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader have near total control over what gets a vote. A bill leadership doesn't want scheduled, never get scheduled. And leadership in both parties has known every Congress since 2012. That's a real reform bill would pass if it ever reached the floor. So it never does. The answer is it 535 members individually support stock trading. It's a handful of people who control the calendar don't want a vote that exposes them either way. Support reform and lose colleagues' trust. Oppose it and lose public trust. The lever is calendar control. Leadership choose not to pull it. If you want to change that, you have to make the cost of not pulling the lever higher than the cost of pulling it. That's not a legal question. It's a political one. And the answer is the same one behind every successful reform movement in American history. Organized, sustained public pressure on the specific people who hold the lever. What you can do. Note the disclosure. The data is public, just not user-friendly in its raw form. Unusual whales and capital trades both make it searchable. The Campaign Legal Center publishes periodic compliance analysis. 15 minutes a month, free, and you know exactly what your representatives are trading. So it's at unusualwhales.com/politics and capitaltrades.com. Hold them accountable directly. Call the direct office. It doesn't need to be elaborate. I'm a constituent. I've seen the senators' X-trades include companies regulated by their own committee. I want to know their position on the Ethics Act and I want them to commit to a floor vote. Enough calls change the circulation in that office. There is a public list of who has signed onto the Ethics Act, who has introduced reform, and who has documented an active trader. Use that information at the ballot box. The issue stays alive because journalists, podcasters, and organizations keep refusing to let it die. Share the data, share the names, share the bills that died widely in committee. The Campaign Legal Center, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, the Foundation for Accountability and Civic Trust, and the Project on Government Oversight run on small donations and produce the public record documentation reporting like this is built on. The small corruptions of American government are the ones that, by their accumulation, define what kind of country we are. We are not in 2026, a country where elected representatives are forbidden by law from enriching themselves on information they obtain by virtue of office. We are a country where they have repeatedly voted not to forbid themselves, and that vote has never been taken in public. It's been taken in committee rooms, in scheduling decisions, in private conversations between leadership and committee chairs. It has been taken in the dead silence of bills introduced and never moved. You can easily prosecute a member of Congress under the Stock Act. You cannot easily move the chain from a classified briefing to a spousal trade. The legal architecture for that prosecution barely exists. But you can vote, you can organize, you can call, you can refuse to treat the legalized self-enrichment of the political class as the price of doing business in a democracy. The Ethics Reporter is independent because it has to be. No advertisers, no corporate sponsors, no money from a law firm, PACs, or institution with a stake in these conversations. If this episode was useful, subscribe at theethicsreporter.com/newsletter. Share it with one person who needs to hear it, and if you are able, support reader-funded accountability journalism at theethicsreporter.com/donate. We are independent because of you. This has been The Ethics Reporter. I'm your host, and I'll be back next week. Thank you for listening.